Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with the Drake Jason Justice filling in for Jake Gutierrez. We have Sam Ellinger now in studio from the Kansas City Star. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Very good. Very good. It's a very big day.
A big day?
It's a Sunflower Showdown.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that?
I was.
Tonight?
I was. I had it on my calendar. Mm-hmm.
Can you please, Drake, could you drop Charlie Weiss proclaiming it's the Sunflower Showdown in this
segment? He doesn't know about no Sunflower
Showdown.
In this
hour, no less than five times, whenever there's a pause, a dramatic pause, or anything like that. There are two Charlie Weiss clips that we have.
All right, the Sunflower Showdown.
That one, you could feel the excitement that he had for the rivalry.
Contagious.
And also when Charlie Weiss says, "We are talking about K-State."
That's right.
And that's when you knew, he gets this rivalry. Yeah, right. He understands what he's just walked into. And so we'll look forward to those reminders of how big this is tonight. So let's start with what happened on Saturday. There was no surprise that K-State beat Oklahoma State because Oklahoma State's not very good. But K-State, they put the hammer down on them. As Mitch Holtis would say. But what was the surprise? So that blowout wasn't a surprise. K-State deserves credit for keeping focused and taking care of business. And it's not even really a surprise that Texas Tech won against Kansas. It was a surprise that it was 45-20 at halftime.
Yeah, that was you're right. I expected Tech to win. I think they're the better team. They're at home. I think there's some momentum if you look at, you know, teams that win at home and then they go on the road and play that same team. If that other team is better, you know, these results happen a lot. I thought Tech would win by 8, 10, 12, something like that. What was weird, too, is a lot of times if a team gets just run like that, you think, well, they quit. I thought KU was playing hard. Like I didn't think they quit. I just thought they were completely overmatched in every conceivable way that a basketball team can be overmatched. That was, you know, jaw to the floor.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. You know? Yeah. Like, it seems like Kansas has been the windshield for most of the big Bill Self era. They were the bug, and it didn't look like you said, there's been games when they went down to Texas and, you know, LeGerald Vick was still on the team at that time. And Bill Self basically said, like somebody said, when did you know that the team was going to struggle today or whatever. He's like, I mean, you know, when we flew down here, like he basically said, like, our team was never engaged mentally in this one. We didn't show up. Like, that didn't feel like, oh, they just didn't show up. It felt like they just got their asses kicked. Like, they just got beat by a much, much better team who was playing really good.
You know what's wild, too? They were, I don't have the box score in front of me, but their three-point shooting was tremendous.
Texas Tech.
They hit all their shots. And that's what created the blowout. But I feel like even if they weren't hitting, you know, even if they were hitting 35% or whatever, I still think they would have won by 10 points.
Double digits.
That's how it got out of hand. Because, you know, KU doesn't guard the three-point line. This has been a thing for a very long time. They don't guard the three-point line as well as they should. And so once Tech starts hitting some shots, it gets out of hand. But, Culver and, Mooney, like, everybody was just – they were so far ahead of KU – that I don't think it mattered, and KU could have hit some more shots even, and it still wouldn't have mattered. That was that Texas Tech defense that, you know, that we'd been hearing about, right? And been seeing for the entire season. And I think people who, you know, maybe only watch KU or only watch Tech games when, you know, there's, you know, an extraordinary interest or whatever, and remember that game in the Fieldhouse, don't really grasp how good defensively Tech is. I thought they did a really good job on the broadcast too on Saturday of pointing out situations where, you know, it's not just they have good athletes, and they do have good athletes, but they play really good team defense. you know, when they switch, their switches are right on time. When they, you know, the help man will come over and redirect the dribble drive out to the paint or outside of the paint a little bit, you know, just at exactly the right time. They are so well coached. That guy, Chris Beard, is a tremendous, tremendous coach. You know, God, that was I saw a couple people, I think Jesse Newell and maybe C.J. Moore mentioned this on Twitter about in Jason King's book and Pat Knight called going into the Allen Fieldhouse the meat necklace.
Yeah.
They're like, this was the meat necklace game, you know, the other way around.
So one of the things I do think the storyline that has gotten a little bit of mention around here, but we always take it from KU's perspective instead of the other teams, is how well Texas Tech, like, they're blowing everybody out right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so they've won five games in a row, and I'm gonna add up, like, with the average, but it's been by 31, 12, 25, 28, and 29 points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Three of those teams are probable NCAA tournament teams, too, depending on what you think about Oklahoma.
Right.
But that game was on the road as well.
I mean, you don't win conference games by, you know, 20-plus points on a consistent basis, even when you're Kansas. You know, I mean, yeah, they're averaging 25 points margin of victory over this five-game winning streak.
Right.
I mean, that – we should pause and talk about how good this Texas Tech team is, not to take anything away from KU's struggles, because KU's issues – that's what I told Steven earlier. It's like, you know, look, getting beat by 29 is one thing. But this wasn't just there was one game where KU got their asses kicked and they weren't ready to play, or, you know, right. The other team just hit all their shots. Kansas has five road losses in this league. I mean, this was a combination of a team that's got major issues from a leadership standpoint, from a depth standpoint, from a performance on the road standpoint, against another team, but that is cruising right now. I mean, cruising. Think about that. 25. I mean, how many teams in any major conference are winning five games in a row by an average margin of 25 points in league play?
Yeah. And again, they're not – a couple of those games were layups, right? They had Oklahoma State.
West Virginia.
And West Virginia at home.
Right.
But still, the other three, again, are probable NCAA tournament teams.
Hey, the game at Oklahoma State, you know, I mean,
yeah.
TCU just lost there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, usually in league play, even when you play bad teams, the games are a little closer because everybody knows what you're trying to run. They know your system.
Yeah.
There's too much familiarity to just go kick people's butts.
Yeah, and they just went 25 and 29 against two of the best, what, five teams in the league, four teams in the league, you know?
Right, right.
They are really balanced. You know, they've got obviously have a star, right? Jarrett Culver is as good as anybody in the league. You know, maybe the player of the year in the league, maybe. But they've got everybody on that team can play, and everybody on that team defends, and you know they've got a incredible home court advantage. And I'm always a little skeptical of teams that have an incredible home court advantage in the NCAA tournament. It just becomes a different thing. But that's the kind of team, you know, like defense travels, right? You know, you're going to defend. If you defend, you're going to defend in the NCAA tournament. That's a team that could really, you know, is the Big 12 is weird this year, right? Like statistically or by RPI, I think they're still the number one league in the country. I believe that's right, without double checking. But they don't have, you know, when if you ask people, you know, casual college basketball fans, the best league in the country, they'd all say the ACC, I would assume.
Sure.
And for good reason. That has, you know, Duke and Carolina at the top and you know, some stud
Virginia.
Teams. Virginia. Virginia's a great team. You know, some great teams at the top. But there's four or five teams in that league that are garbage. You know, the Big 12 doesn't have that. The Big 12 doesn't have Duke, Virginia, Carolina at the top, but it's a pretty good, you know, balanced league. And for Texas Tech to, you know, do what they're doing right now against some pretty good teams, that just speaks very highly of them. And they might be the team that kind of breaks through, you know, the non-Kansas team to make a tournament run.
Okay, here's Bill Self in his press conference after the loss to Texas Tech.
I disagree with you. I think we did show up ready. So I totally disagree with you. I just think we played bad. I mean, and I think they played great. They were terrific. They beat anybody in the country tonight. But certainly we contributed to them playing well. But it wasn't because we didn't show up ready. Don't go there with that.
It was where I needed to be with your guy.
Yeah, that wasn't it at all. I think it was more it when they got six different guys and make double figure. I mean, double, at least two threes. And, you know, it's you know, whenever you have three guys make three threes and I don't take more than four, that's pretty impressive.
What is the key to defending
the three? Well, it'd be nice if you're there close to them when they catch it. But the whole thing with that was I'm not sure that we weren't worth a crap, but they play four. When they go four guards, it changes what we do, and we played the percentages in some ways, and then they burned us, and then after we got discombobulated, it didn't make any difference what we did. We switched, we tried to hedge, but after we started changing what we were doing, we were just very poor at everything we did.
So what do you think of how Bill Self reacted when asked if it was because his team wasn't ready to play and that's why they got blown out?
Yeah, cosign. I guess we just talked about this. Yeah, I thought they played with energy. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't. That wasn't a team that just laid down. That was a team that got steamrolled.
They're just not as good.
Yeah.
Like
you like when he, the guy asked him about defending the three. He goes, "Well, it'd be nice if you're close to him when he caught it." Yeah. Like, you could, you know, it'd be nice if they do it. Like, they're not going to, but it would be nice.
Well, the old Jim McKay thing. What do you think of your team's execution on the road? I'm in favor of it. Yeah, look, you know, Ochai Agbaji's been a revelation for KU, but I think we saw in this game that he can't just, like, you can't just expect as much better as he is than his 145th ranking, he still is a freshman, mm-hmm. you know, and Quentin Grimes, Quentin Grimes is the kid that's getting all the, what's the word, you know, the criticism from KU fans right now. Mm-hmm. The you know, how is this kid the number 8 ranked recruit in the country when he's, like, what's he good at? I had a bunch of people texting me that over the weekend. What is Quentin Grimes like? What made him? What is he supposed to be so good at that made him this high ranked recruit? And it's like, it's crazy to think that he scored 21 points in that game against Michigan State at the start of the season with 6 of 10 from beyond the arc. He hasn't scored in double figures in the Big 12 since January 5th against Iowa State. That was the second game of conference play. He has not scored in double figures in a Big 12 game since. Isn't that crazy?
That's bonkers. He obviously, I didn't see him play in high school.
Right.
So I don't know. But it looks like he looks talented.
Right.
You know, he looks physically talented. God, excuse me. But he looks hesitant as well. He looks slow. He looks, you know. Look, like, I think Devon Dotson, at the beginning of the year to now, has really progressed. And Dotson wasn't bad at the beginning of the year, but there was just a little bit of a hesitation, at least to my eye. And now Devon Dotson is having a terrific year. You know, he's having a freshman year. I mean, they've had some good freshman years, but he's had a freshman year that's in that class of some of the studs that they've had in the past. And he didn't come in with the number one recruiting ranking or whatever, but you know, he's scoring 15, 18 a game, and you know, he's really improved in transition. He can get to the rack. He's developing into a leader, you know, all those things. But my point is the development from Dotson at the beginning of the year, when I think he was also a little bit hesitant, to now when he's a stud. We just haven't seen that same development from Quentin Grimes. And that's always the thing with freshmen. It's how do you get better? Like, how do you improve as the season goes on? And if anything, Grimes may be getting a little bit worse, which,
yeah,
you know, kind of, at least again, to my brain, means it's mental.
Right.
That he feels a little bit overwhelmed and, you know, it's moving a little bit too fast for him.
Okay. Let's talk about the Kansas State side of things, because we talked about this earlier. when I was asking Nate about what might happen around here and on his Twitter timeline if Kansas State goes to Allen Fieldhouse tonight. And you think about all the things they could accomplish. They could end KU streak tonight, right? They win tonight, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And they could put themselves in a fantastic position to win it outright. Mm-hmm. So not only, I experienced several Missouri teams in my life that weren't playing for a conference championship, but beating Kansas was a huge,
sure,
a season maker. It's always great when you beat Kansas if you're K-State or Mizzou or any of the teams of the Big 12. But not only knocking them off their pedestal and ending the streak, but then likely you win the title.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sweep them for the first time since 1983. Is that right, Nate, what you said?
Yeah.
83?
Yep.
On Big Monday at Allen Fieldhouse, win the Big 12, take it away from them, sweep them for the first time. And this is a team, it wouldn't take a great effort. It could be just a normal game, and K-State's the better team because it appears that they are the better team. They don't have to play out of their minds. They have to play well. They don't have to play out of their minds to go to Allen Fieldhouse and win because they're I was going to say evenly matched, but they're not. Kansas State is a better team with senior leadership and a couple of better players in Dean Wade and Barry Brown. So this all could happen. And on top of that, they have won – I believe how many conference road games have they won in a row? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They're 6-1 on the road in the conference. And the last time they lost in conference on the road was at Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And that was their first road game of the year in the conference. Now, they lost a road game at Texas A&M sandwiched in there, but that wasn't a conference game. So they're 6-1 on the road in the conference. They've won 6 straight on the road. So this is the best road team in the conference, too.
Yeah, that Texas Tech game too, in addition to being on January 5th, which is a long time ago, I believe that was when Dean Wade was out with a foot injury. He's slowed now. I watched him practice the other day, and he didn't do anything. I mean, he just kind of stood on the sidelines and, was kind of dribbling and doing that. So they're saving the bullets, which they should do, and he'll play tonight. But you just wonder, not just physically, but, sort of the rhythm of a team. I think that matters. I think that K-State, you just said this, Stephen, I agree with you. I think K-State is better than Kansas. I think on a neutral floor, if they play in Kansas City, in 3 weeks or whenever that's going to be, I would expect K-State to win just because I think they're the better team. But there's some other stuff going on here that I think sets it up difficult for K-State. Besides the injuries, besides, Cam Stokes not practicing, besides Dean Wade not practicing. And it's just that building, that building is still tough. As bad as KU has been on the road, and Nate, you just talked about this, at 1-6, 1-5 or whatever, on the road in conference play.
1-6 overall because they lost that game at Arizona State.
Yeah, okay.
1-5 in conference.
True road play, games, yeah. Yep.
2-5. They won at Baylor and at TCU.
That's right. I forgot to put the Baylor game. Yeah. At Allen Fieldhouse, it's a different team, and it's just a different feel in all of those games. And I also, I've mentioned this on your show before, like I believe in kind of the momentum of the schedule. And if you don't think KU, after getting embarrassed, emasculated, crushed, shamed in Lubbock, isn't going to come back and play really well, I've seen this before. Kansas tends to play really well in those moments. If they don't, they got a lot of issues. If they don't, they got a lot of big, big, big issues. But I think what happened on Saturday matters for tonight.
So let's go back to what Bill Self said after the game when he was asked about it, and he was pretty adamant, don't go there, about saying the team wasn't ready to play. I think there's a couple things to that. Number one, Bill Self is a pretty good coach when it comes to knowing how to motivate his team. He knows when they need a kick in the ass, and he knows when they need a pat on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he saw a team after that game that needed a pat on the back because he's got a bunch of freshmen that he's counting on out there. I mean, he's starting 4 freshmen in that game, and they got slaughtered. And those 4 freshmen, none of them scored in double figures. Ochai Agbaji probably had his worst game since, being put in the starting lineup. He knows Quentin Grimes is in his own head and doesn't have any confidence right now. it's not going to do any good to kick him while he's down. You know, Devon Dotson's doing everything he's asking of him, like you said, but it's, you know, he's a freshman. He can't do it all on his own. So I think there's part of it there that he sees a team that needs some confidence right now. They don't need to be smacked down. But I also think, you know, like he was on with Petro a week ago Friday, so like, you know, 9 days ago or whatever, and Petro had asked him about, like, are you having more fun coaching this team because you got these young guys that are sponges? He's like, this has been a horrible experience coaching this team until lately. And you almost get the sense like this, okay, Vic's gone. We've got these young freshmen. They're not as good right now as we need them to be, but they're all trying their butts off, and they're all giving me energy, which is something I wasn't getting earlier in the season from the whole team. So I think he does, like, it's almost like he's like, he doesn't want to lose these guys because they're just not, their issue is not, like, when they lost that game against West Virginia, I thought they have no leadership on the court right now. That's why they lost this game. Like, that's not why they lost this game. They lost this game because they got a bunch of freshmen that aren't ready to win a game like that right now.
Yeah, and they lost to a better team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that West Virginia game was shameful. You know, the last 2 minutes of that game, they took all the wrong shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were dumb. They were panicked. They were hurried. That was...
Hero ball.
Yeah.
I mean,
That was a really bad... That was a really bad finish. And I hadn't thought about it in that way, Nate. That's a good point about, you know, where... Bill is coming, you know, he's very good at using public comments, you know, in for a higher purpose. And I also
he'll trash his guys in the media if he thinks it's going to motivate him.
Yep. And he's done that plenty of times. I also think that there's I think he knows that K-State is probably the better team, you know. Mm-hmm. I think he knows that, you know, Barry Brown is probably going to be the best player on the floor. He knows that Dean Wade is a really hard guard for them. You know, he remembers that game in Bramlage where, you know, it was tight because K-State went, you know, that 10 minutes without a field goal. But then as soon as Dean Wade hit that little, you know, probably 15-footer on the wing, you know, it totally changed how KU had to play defense in the second half. And that, I mean, you know, that moment, just he knows that this is a really hard matchup for his guys. And that, you know, everything that I just said aside about Allen Fieldhouse and how different it is in that building, there's a mental block both ways. You know, this is still a game where they've got to play well. And I hadn't thought about it again, like the way you said that. It is a interesting way to motivate because he knows he doesn't have much time, right? They probably got in at 3 in the morning or whatever, you know, Saturday night, Sunday morning, however you want to look at it. And they got to be ready. Because K-State's going to be ready. They played at home, you know, in the afternoon against a horrible team. They're going to be coming with, you know, say what you want about the Fieldhouse, and I do think it matters, but Barry Brown, Dean Wade, Cam Stokes, Xavier Sneed, these kids aren't going to be surprised by it, you know? They've seen it before. They haven't won there, but they've seen it before.
Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star is in studio. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star in studio. Sam is working on his column based on the early return from surprise. The Royals is World Series favorites. And so we look forward to reading that very soon.
Damn straight.
As the weather warms. But I'd like to ask you.
I'm kicking ass in the Cactus League already.
Just back off there. I'd like to ask you what this win would mean for Kansas State and for Bruce Weber. Let's start with Bruce Weber.
Yeah.
What would this, because it feels like, okay, so he got a share of the title before, but then lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And then last year, it felt like, well, okay, finally had success in the tournament, got all the way to the Elite Eight. Maybe that'll get everyone off his back. But then this year, you start to hear some more of the doubt and some more of the complaints. And I even heard somebody say, yeah, they made the Elite Eight, but they lost to Loyola.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. And so still there's still things to pick at. But what would this mean for Bruce Weber to win this game tonight?
Yeah, I mean this sincerely. I think it's hard to overstate it. for a lot of reasons. Everything. Look, I've always liked Bruce. You guys know that. Sometimes I feel like I like him more than K-State fans do.
Wow.
But he has, and why I think that is that a lot of times I think K-State fans hate him. every accomplishment that he's had, like, you know, his greatest moments in coaching have been dismissed by a lot of people. You know, his best years at Illinois, well, that was Bill Self's players. His that shared conference title in 2013, that was Frank Martin's players. And you lost three times to Kansas. And then 2 years after that, I think it was when they, you know, kicked Marcus Foster and who's the other guy? Trey Harris, I believe, off the team. And that was kind of a program reboot in which Bruce Weber could have been fairly and justifiably fired at that moment. He would not have had too much of a complaint. And a lot of K-State fans wanted him fired. We told you so. You know, as soon as Frank's players left, you know, he got his guys in and he screwed it up. This is the same thing that happened at the end of Illinois. He got another chance. And this is the first recruiting class after that, the first recruiting class of sort of, you know, Bruce 2.0 at K-State. And he got Barry Brown, he got Dean Wade, and he got Cam Stokes. And then a year later, he got Xavier Sneed. And that is the nucleus for this team that he has been coaching toward since the moment that he got the K-State job. I think that Bill Self and Kansas cast a big shadow, in particular, over Bruce Weber, because of Illinois and because of where he is now. You know, I was just telling you off air, I've spent a lot of time, you know, with both those programs, and I never hear KU mention K-State. Every time I go there, I hear K-State mention KU, and it's not as sort of a, I don't bring it up, and it's, you know, they're not making a point. It's just, you know, sort of always there. And to be able to do that, I just think this would be Bruce's team going into that building, knocking, you know, doing something that no Big 12 team has been able to do for 15 years, you know, for 14 years in a row. So 15 years ago was the last time that anybody was able to, you know, be good enough for Kansas to not win at least a share. I think it would be a monumental moment for Bruce personally, the kind of thing where he would get emotional in the locker room, if not also in the press conference. The kind of thing that, you know, they would be hanging pictures of that moment, you know, around the K-State basketball facility. You know what I mean? Like, I really do think it would be that kind of moment because it would set them up to win an outright Big 12 championship, the kind of thing that literally no coach in the Big 12 has done other than Bill Self. It would be incredible. And they have the better team. I really believe that, that they have the better team.
You know, another layer to this is I don't think that there's a lot of love lost between these two coaches either.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go on.
I mean, you can see it doesn't take like a real Sherlock Holmes to figure out like which coaches kind of enjoy one another's company and which coaches kind of tolerate one another's company. Mm-hmm. You know, like you get the sense like when Frank Martin was at KU, Bill Self and Frank Martin genuinely liked each other. Mm-hmm. Like that didn't mean they didn't want to, you know, I mean, they had some great battles, you know, in terms of their teams going after each other, physical games, all that stuff. But they genuinely liked each other. You could tell it. And like Bill Self and Bob Huggins, right? Like, sure. Even though Bob Huggins has a knack for beating Bill Self and getting his $25,000 check, you can tell those two guys like each other. They're going out to dinner when they're, you know, at conferences and stuff. Bill Self and Bruce Weber are not going out to dinner together.
Right.
Like I don't think either one of them wants to go to dinner with the other guy.
They are really different human beings.
Yes, in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And you already get the sense that Chris Beard and Bill Self go to dinner together. Like they like each other. You know, I get it. Just seems that seems like palpable right when mm-hmm. when you see it. And so I don't know if that has any like extra, but like for Bill Self, it's like, man, the streak's gonna end. I'm gonna lose to this guy. Mm-hmm. And for Bruce Weber, it's probably like, yeah, end this guy's streak.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely. There's no question,
right?
There's no question. All of that is beyond debate, I would say. yes,
they don't even really try to hide it too much. You know,
yeah. I think, especially like on Bruce's side, you know, whether Bill even is aware of a lot of this or not, you know. Bruce followed Bill And, you know, that was hard at Illinois, you know, because Bill had pushed that program, you know, as far as it got. And then Bruce took them. He doesn't get enough credit for this. You know, that was one of the best teams that hadn't won a national championship in a long time. That team went 37-2 or something like that.
They were so good.
They were and one of my favorite all-time teams to watch. They were so fast. They played a beautiful brand of basketball.
They could shoot. They could move the ball. Yeah.
And Bruce was the coach. Bruce coached that team, but everybody will tell you it was Bill's players. So
as soon as I even mention that, Jake can't. He doesn't even let the words get out of my mouth. Yeah. That was Bill's players. Mm-hmm. He coached them up. It's like he gets less credit.
Right.
He gets no credit. Right. He's like, you know, credit's taken away from him.
Even though he took those players to, you know, a height that Bill didn't.
Right.
You know, Bill didn't make a national championship game with those guys.
Do you think
that Bill would have won the national championship with those guys?
That's the comeback every time.
If Kansas State wins tonight, do you think Bruce Weber, when they get back to Manhattan, will have a funeral for the streak? And will they bury KU's streak somewhere?
I knew something was coming. Well, I could see it in your eyes.
Do you think so?
I think Bruce has learned his lesson from that funeral. I think.
No. Do it. I think you should do it.
Barry Brown's in favor of it.
I think it'd be great. Yeah, it'd be hilarious.
Barry Brown's in favor of it, you know. Shout out Brennan Green. Mm-hmm. So, it really does add a lot of layers to this game tonight.
It is, absolutely. And when I was at K-State for a practice last week, and somebody very close to the program said that there was a national reporter that wanted to write a story about, like, well, this will be the biggest KU K-State game ever. And they're like, you know, 1988.
Elite Eight.
You know, literally playing to get to the Final Four. But as far as a regular season game, I'm sure there's been, you know, moments similar to this, but this is right there. As far as a regular season
game. For a game at Allen Fieldhouse?
Between these programs. It's got to be close, I would think.
At Allen Fieldhouse, maybe. I mean, to me, the game that I'll always remember during the Bill Self, Bruce Weber era, well, it was Frank Martin era. The Bill Self era was the year that Kansas won the national championship, and K-State had Bill Walker and Michael Beasley and Jacob Pullen. Those were two stars. Those were two far better teams than the two teams that are going to play tonight.
Absolutely.
And K-State won that game, if I remember correctly, in Manhattan. And they stormed the court, and the mm-hmm. players jumped up on the table. And that game.
So was that team, that K-State team, you think was better than this K-State team?
I think so. I mean, gosh, Michael Beasley was an incredible player.
Yeah, it's
Jacob Pullen was not a senior at that time, but what a player he was. I mean, he was on Barry Brown's level, and I mean, Bill Walker was on that team. I mean, that team was a better team, in my opinion. Yes, that Kansas team unquestionably was. I mean, a lot better than this team.
What year was that?
Both 2008,
2009, I believe.
Both those programs have been better playing each other. That's not my point about, you know, the best game. You know, my point that I'm trying to make is the context and what's on the line, kind of what we've been talking about. Of, you know, if Kansas wins tonight, they still have an outside chance. You know, maybe sharing a title. They, you know, obviously still need some help, but for K-State to be able to knock them down. You know, slash the throat of the streak.
No.
You know, go in there and you know, first sweep. I think it's an incredible moment.
K-State that year was 21-12 and 10-6 in the conference.
Yeah, and if I remember right, Jake Pullen was a freshman, 9.7 points a game. Like, you know, that wasn't Jake Pullen, Jake F. Pullen.
Right.
You know, not quite yet. It's an interesting comparison because I think, like,
well, this team could go 14-4 and win the conference.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, that K-State team clearly had better players. You know, Michael Beasley is a talent the likes of which, you know, this K-State team just, you know, can't match. But I think this K-State team's a better, like, you know, sort of team, you know, with the emphasis of team like that. I mean, that, you know, they had some ups and downs. You know, there were moments where, you know, Bill Walker would kind of, you know, look a little lost, you know.
Right. I mean that team was 10-6 in the conference. They were 1-and-done in the Big 12 tournament, and then they won one game in the NCAA tournament. This is the team that basically their nucleus went to the Elite Eight, a game away from the Final Four. Now they come back and they have a chance to win 14-4 Big 12. I know that team had higher end talent, but at the time,
yeah,
we're talking about what they were and what this team is.
Yeah, no, it's a real. I'm just looking at that roster. There's some names on there: Clint Stewart, Louis Cologne, Dominique Sutton. There's some.
But in retrospect, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of amazing they didn't accomplish more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you have that guy, when you have the number two pick in the draft.
But you know what? It also goes to show what this K-State team has that team doesn't, is senior leadership.
Yeah.
Or that team didn't, I should say. You know, because Beasley was a freshman, right? You know, Poland was a freshman.
Right, but that's part of it. That's why I think this is a better team.
Yeah.
I mean, look, like, think about that team with Jake, with senior Jake Poland, you know.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Right. Like, because that's the thing, like, when you think about and those names I just mentioned, you know, Dominique Sutton was a freshman that year that didn't play much. But it's just, you know, some names of some guys that, like, you know, bring back some memories is my point bringing that up. But I don't know. I kind of think that this K-State team is better than that one. I really do.
Well,
Barry
they're going to accomplish
so
more.
Good. Barry Brown is so good.
They're going to accomplish more.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's beyond debate.
And they can end up having the Big 12 player of the year.
But I do think that, I mean, not to go back and look at what the Big 12 standings were back then. I feel like the Big 12 was better then.
Kansas was 13-3, Texas was 13-3, and then K-State was 10-6.
That was a Kevin Durant, right? Was that Kevin Durant?
I don't think it was Durant. No. It might have been. I don't think it was, though.
Or was it the DJ Augustine? Yeah, that was the DJ Augustine Texas team that was really loaded. They went, they were really good. Because I remember KU playing against them in the Big 12 championship game and how amazing that game was.
We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sunflower Showdown tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Tip-off is at 8 o'clock. What about these running Royals? Sam Mellinger off to the hottest of starts in Surprise, Arizona.
They are a force in the Cactus League year in and year out. You don't want to mess with them in late February.
Kyle Zimmer made his first appearance and got people out. How about Kyle Zimmer?
And walked off the mound
with
his arm intact.
Right. No one was called out to the mound to investigate.
I'm here for all of the Kyle Zimmer jokes, but I do think that look, like you should always approach anything Kyle Zimmer with, you know, some dose of skepticism. But I think he deserves an open mind. I think Driveline, I think that stuff matters. You know, I think they might be onto something. And, you know, I guess the better way of putting it is this. I think there's a legitimate chance that Kyle Zimmer, you know, may be fixed, you know, maybe at least able to have a career is a better, you know, healthy enough to be a big league pitcher. You know, with some use limitations.
Maybe he could be a high leverage reliever. Who knows?
Yep. But I also think, like, if it doesn't work now after all this, that may be the last that it goes. But he's still talented. He had some flashes. Was that last year? Gosh, I'm getting my years mixed up. Either last year or the year before, he was in Omaha for a little bit. And I remember talking to some people in the front office about, like, you guys should bring him up now. Like, you know, don't waste any of these pitches minor leagues.
We had this conversation last year. You probably were talking about that with us. He had like three good outings. Call him up.
Yes, immediately.
Because it's a ticking time bomb. Yep. He's pitching well. Get something out of him now.
Yep.
I'm with you, absolutely. Yep. And it's not the craziest thing in the world that if he could turn into a useful reliever. I mean, he's never going to be able to be a starting pitcher because of what's happening with his arm and his shoulder, but why not?
Yes. Like a Luke Hochaver level reliever, something like that. You know, maybe with even a little bit of upside there. I mean, it just, those are the kind of things that need to happen for this to take, you know, for this, you know, movement, you know, Royals push, you know, the second wave of this administration, of this regime. You know, they need stuff like that. They need Kyle Zimmer to, you know, to be healthy. They need Hunter Dozier to hit a little bit. They need Jorge Soler to stay healthy. They need some of these like little smaller breaks that I think like can add up, and before you know it, maybe next year, the year after, you've got a contender.
Do you guys know how much money Kyle Zimmer got as his signing bonus? Because this was before slotting.
I was going to say like five, I'm guessing.
According to, I looked up his article, $7.5 million.
That's a good check.
That's enough to live on for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Very comfortably. And obviously, if you can make it to the big leagues and play for a while, you can make even more, obviously a lot more than that. But I just pointed out to say that I respect the guy for continuing to try.
Yeah.
I mean, look, a lot of people quit minor league baseball because the life sucks.
Yeah.
Like minor league baseball, it's not a glorious life at all. They make garbage money. They travel around on buses. They don't get any sleep. It's not a glamorous life. And so a lot of guys, like a guy that I was very close friends with, married my sister's best friend, was an All-American at Wichita State, pitched in the College World Series, got drafted, and after 2 years of minor league baseball, he quit. He was like, screw this, man. I don't know if I'm ever going to make it, and I'm not going to put up with this for another 6 years.
Yeah.
And this guy, like, he's got $7.5 million in the bank. He's still giving it a shot. Like, all these years later, he's still trying to see if he can make it work. And I respect that. I'm not saying he's a warrior or something like that, but I respect the fact that he hasn't given up. And for that part, like, I'm kind of rooting for him. I hope it works out for him.
You know, the only thing worse than minor league baseball as a professional baseball player is rehabbing as a minor league baseball player. I get sick of Surprise like after like 2 weeks down there, and that guy has lived his life in Surprise, Arizona. That is no way to go through life, man.
And when do you will you be calling into us next week from Surprise, Arizona? When do you?
You know what? My flight is actually on Monday, but it's later in the day, so I might be able to come in and then
we'll still see you.
Yeah,
thank you very much. That is Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. Back after this on WHB.